And welcome to what I hope to be the first installment of Beefcake's Advanced Stage. We're toying around with some other names. It might end up getting called Advanced Ramblings with Beefcake, sort of inspired after Bob Whitaker's Bob's Meanderings. But this is my own take on things that go beyond the mantra and would, in some cases, be tailgating territory. I still will drop mantra stuff in and mantra concepts. As much as I can, but you know, the like I've said before, with the end of Beefcake's boot camp, it's really hard to just make a podcast series for any length of time explaining just how to use the mantra. excuse me, I'm a touch under the weather. Don't worry, my health is fine. I had a thing going on a number of months ago, but I'm over that. I'm good. I should be with us for, I don't know, another 50 to 60 years if I eat right and exercise right. So anyway, I might cough and sneeze a little bit on this podcast, but being you're at the advanced stage and we understand that this is a free podcast, if you can't handle a little bit of coughing and sneezing. Basically, in this series, I want to go into things that go a little bit beyond the mantra, into some of the other things in my worldview, and you'll see some mantra thinking in there. But being that we're at the advanced stage, at this point, I'm more interested in exposing people to the way I think and how that open system thinking that Horace has talked about has affected the way that I think. There's a lot of means to get a pro-white perspective out there these days. Well, this one is Beefcake's, and I will be going into material that sometimes is not going, in fact, many times is not going to be useful to go out and post with the mantra, but it is part of my worldview and how I see things, and if you don't like that, fine, go post the mantra. If you are interested in hearing other things I have to say, then go ahead and keep listening. A lot of this comes down to entertainment and motivation. And like I mentioned on the last podcast, it is very hard to be entertained these days as a pro-white. There isn't a lot of material out there to entertain us because we see all the anti-white propaganda in everything. One thing I wanted to say is one of the successes our mantra has had and that our swarm has been successful with in spreading our memes and how big this thing has grown. You have it growing to the point where you're going to see more and more people in more and more power positions that were probably undercover levers. Now, obviously, Griffin was pro-white, but he hadn't been on the mantra yet because, I mean, come on, accusing your opponent of genocide is a heavy charge if people aren't ready for it yet. But when people are out on message, you're getting everybody ready for it. And you're going to see politicians that were actually undercover lovers, that you weren't even aware were pro-white, and you're going to start seeing them coming on message in the very near future. I believe you're going to see it happening. Sometimes it's going to surprise us, but but I believe we have more allies out there than we realize, that it just needed a safe environment to come out and openly be pro-white. And something to say on the subject, other than we don't like all the crimes black people are committing, or talking about Jewish conspiracies. I think that talking about white genocide and putting an end to it, and putting an end to the speech control that's been imposed in order to impose white genocide on us is a big enough political issue. You're going to see more people being able to get on message for this because now they actually have memes out there that they can play on. It's part of how it works. We're seeing anti-white or anti-racist is a code word for anti-white showing up all over the place, and anti-white itself is becoming a household term. You can just call things anti-white these days and people don't even think about it when you say it. It doesn't surprise them. The term doesn't surprise them anymore. It seems so much more natural now. And a sign of these successes is the fact that anti-whites themselves are getting more blatant and more honest about being anti-white. We are seeing this. I did a little bit of a podcast a while back called Havoc in the Enemy Camp. And it talked about us sometimes wearing the pink rabbit skin and spreading our memes from an anti-white standpoint. And whenever you see an anti-white coming out and just directly supporting white genocide and claiming that it's justified because we did the evil things in history, and when it's really blatant, when they're gloating about genocide and it's very, very obvious, I know it seems hard for us to do, but when they're doing that, when they're spreading the mantra for us, even though they are gloating about genocide, what our strategy should be at that point is to just let them. Just you don't need to go in and point out the code words they're using when they're being straightforward and honest, because they're actually, well, just think about what they're doing politically to themselves when they get real honest about white genocide, and think of how that's going to go over. I mean, there's a reason Team Anti-White in the first place had to use all sorts of code words for things. There's a reason they had to brainwash people and teach them all sorts of misinformation that contradicts itself. You know, you need affirmative action to help non-whites get by in white countries, but race doesn't exist. You know, we need more diversity since race doesn't exist. White people have no right to preserve themselves since race doesn't exist, but they're guilty for taking the Indians' land. You know, all these contradictions that are obvious to us, but a lot of people, they don't teach them the contradictions right next to each other. I mean, it's surprisingly close, but not to the point where it sounds silly when you say them together. They used these methods to brainwash white people into being okay with white genocide. And what happens is when anti-whites have to become more honest, the whole thing unravels, because people see the bullshit when somebody starts saying there really is something genetically evil about white people and they're a cancer on this world. They're directly calling out whitey. They're admitting anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. They're admitting that the way they feel on the world is a result of brainwashing. They accept that diversity and multiculturalism is being targeted only at white countries and at all white countries, and that it results in a world without white people, and that they start saying that this is a good thing and that they openly support white genocide. Do you think it's going to hold together? Honestly, do you think the average normal white person sitting on the fence just trying to raise his family, going to work and coming home and kissing his wife and kids or the couples that are facing the hardships that white people face right now with all the economic garbage that's been done to us? I mean, all of the multifaceted elements of white genocide that go beyond the interbreeding scheme, which is, of course, the most dangerous part of it, but there's a lot of Team Anti-White that goes way beyond this. Things that affect us in so many ways that have been done to us. I mean, you got to consider people have been getting poisoned in many ways by this well. And I know if you look up logical fallacies, I know poisoning the well is considered a logical fallacy. But in this instance, I believe, are truly dealing with a situation of a poisoned well. And so every single thing that people are being taught these days, if the anti-white stuff is getting taught to you by a particular source, then at the very least, all the other information they've given you requires being questioned and so when Team Anti-White goes down, we might be rediscovering a lot of our history, because who knows what all we've been getting lied to. I mean, if they're going to lie to you on whether or not your race exists, or try telling you the world's a better place if your people are wiped out, who knows what the heck else they've lied to you about. Okay, so I'm going off on a bunch of tangents here. Anyway, back to anti-whites getting more honest. That's what we're talking about here. There is a blog that has been up for a while, and it's actually been up since June. I mean, and this stuff has only ramped up even more since then, but there's a web page, a blog called Be Young and Shut Up. And you can go ahead and Google it, look it up, and it actually has a page on why anti-racist is code word for anti-white. It's interesting. It's by a Solomon Wong. And this Solomon here goes into a very long tirade on at first explaining that white genocide is real, agreeing that it's real, agreeing with the people on the mantra that, yes, this is correct what they're saying. But then this person tries transitioning it later into why we should be supporting white genocide and why it's a good thing. And I don't believe they're going to be successful at converting anyone to being anti-white and supporting white genocide who isn't already anti-white. But they might open up the eyes of a lot of the audience into seeing how anti-whites really think. I just find it interesting that one of the effects of the mantra, and I hoped for this initially, but I wasn't sure if we really would be so fortunate to see this, but sure enough, anti-whites are becoming more honest and open about being anti-white. It's kind of like when the terms like racist was used to silence anyone white who would talk about race at all in any way. If an anti-white didn't like it, they would call this white person a racist. That's why racist is a code word for anti-white. Or racist is a code word for anyone with an opinion that anti-whites don't like. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. however you want to put it. You know what I'm talking about. You're at the advanced stage, okay? It's just like when these terms were used to silence anyone who is pro-white talking about race, and eventually a lot of them would make the mistake of just saying, fine, I am racist. Fine, I'm racist. What are you going to do about it? And the problem is that they're vilified for being a racist, or when they come right out and call themselves racist, they at very best get dismissed, and they can get themselves in a lot of trouble, and in America they can lose their job, and in some European countries they can even go to jail. Well, we get to the point now where anti-whites just go, fine, I'm anti-white. Fine, I am anti-white. Fine, I support white genocide. It's a good thing anyway. We finally turn that corner where now they are the ones coming right out with saying, fine, if honesty is the best policy, then I am anti-white and I support white genocide. It's a good thing. See why? And that's the last leg. All the other pillars of bullshit have crumbled, and the last thing they have to stand on is to just blatantly say they support white genocide and there's something uniquely genetically evil about white people. That happens to be the last pillar. I mean, the first pillar you attack, if you're going to knock down the pillars holding up a mountain of lies, you're going to want to go for the cornerstone first. You're going to want to go for the strongest pillar and then the next strongest pillars until the last thing it has to stand on is the weakest one. You always attack the strongest link first. And why do I say that? Because when you take out all of the strongest things your opponent has, all they have to stand on are weak ones. And I'll say that again. That's just Beefcake's way of looking at it. Bob might tell you something different. Horace might tell you something different. If anyone does disagree with me, please explain why. When we're at the advanced stage, you can tell Beefcake why you disagree with him, and Beefcake will look into it. You can teach Beefcake things. I learn things all the time from the swarmers out there. I see some of the things getting posted by some of our swarmers, and I'm shocked. I'm like, wow, I wish I would have thought of that myself. That was really good. All the time, I see stuff like that. And of course, you guys, I don't have to tell you which ones they are if you're listening to these podcasts right now, because you've probably seen them. You've probably been putting them out there. But as far as Beefcake can tell, the best way to attack your enemy, the best strategy, is to take out their strengths first. Then all they have left to stand on are weak arguments and weak things. And if all they have left to stand on is weakness, they're going to be crushed. And the weakest argument an anti-white can possibly use, the last thing left for them to do, is to just blatantly come out and say that there's something genetically, uniquely evil about white children. And by making sure that none of them are born in the future, we can help make the world a better place, because that's not going to resonate very well with white families out there. And of course, funny thing is, a lot of anti-whites, they either don't reproduce or they produce non-white children. So I don't know if our descendants are going to have to deal with them anymore. They, by their own sheer nature, wipe themselves out. Most pro-whites I know are rather prolific. There's a lot of pro-whites out there who, even if they are on message, they still love those little white children. Yes, we do. We love those brilliant blue eyes looking at us with those big smiles, those starry-eyed white children that we love so much, because we know they are the future of our race. Most pro-whites I know, they have kids. Most anti-whites I know don't. That's just one of those little observations that would definitely be tailgating, but it's part of Beefcake's outlook on the world, is noticing these things, and I'll point them out to you. And let me know if you notice some of these things too, because one thing I've noticed is that pro-whites tend to be good about having families. You know, someone who's pro-white is generally not going to be the kind of person who has a few dogs and calls them their kids. Not something that is in the nature of pro-whites, at least not that I've seen for the most part. Well, anyway, I keep going on these tangents. Another thing that kind of lets you in on a bit of the thinking of Team Anti-White, and how being anti-white is a more multifaceted outlook on the world. You know, it goes into the whole everything that's political correctness, everything from the so-called green movements, you know, what the watermelon communism, the green on the outside, red on the inside, the rationing scheme stuff, that everything's a scarce resource, everything that puts us in a closed system that stifles creativity, everything like that, it definitely comes back to Team Anti-White. Anything that results in encouraging a lowered rate of reproduction in white countries. That's the big reason behind the all the gay and lesbian and transgender stuff. And by the way, if you see this Be Young and Shut Up's page, go visit that right now, because you're going to see all the stuff that ties into Team Anti-White, and then a couple surprising things as well that I think are – I could probably make a bunch of podcasts just analyzing this page and giving my various thoughts on it. I could rant about this for a long time, because it's such an interesting – we could actually do like a scientific, psychological look at the mind of the anti-white. They support feminism, not a big shock. That's another ideology that's resulted in reducing the birth rates in white countries. I don't think that feminism is compatible with being pro-white. I don't. It's another ism. It's another part of wordism and political correctness. In fact, I have never met a pro-feminist pro-white. If there are any out there, if you're listening to me right now and you're already at the advanced stage and you've been out there spreading the mantra and you truly believe that you are a feminist and a pro-white, speak up. I don't think there are any out there. And if they are, then chances are I don't think most feminists would consider them a feminist based on the way they think. Because from what I've seen, everyone that calls himself a feminist, everything they've had to say and recommend would only result in a world with less people in it. And being that it's only being spread in white countries, it results in a world with less white people. It's not nearly as dangerous as the interbreeding scheme, obviously. You know, you could have something that for a few generations reduces your birth rate and results in an upside-down population and a reduction in your population. But, I mean, we're white. Okay, we could lose 9/10 of our population. If we still have large enough areas of land for our long-term sustenance, we could be catastrophically decimated population-wise. But so long as we're still able to produce real white children, we could very, very, very quickly rebuild our population. Absolutely. It's much more dangerous to turn us permanently into something that's no longer us than to just reduce our population. I mean, feminism was good for reducing our population, and it might have, you know, the vilifying specifically white males, that's another thing. I've seen a lot of feminists really target the so-called evil white male. And they might be encouraging some reproduction with non-whites as well, because it overlaps a lot. Feminism is a very anti-white ideology. I'll point out that it's very interesting that feminism, which if you study its history, yes, it was started by a communist who was in the KGB files, but essentially white women were told that white males were evil oppressors with something called a patriarchy, that like we had all conspired together throughout history to keep women down and treat them as slaves in the home, you know, and provide homes for them to safely raise their children without having to be chained to a cubicle while their children are raised in a daycare. You know, how dare we provide them with homes and a standard of living so that they can raise their children themselves? I mean, that's some evil oppression that we really conspired to put together there. I mean, how terrible of us. Anyway, Team Anti-White, Team Feminist, it's like a subgroup of the umbrella of Anti-White. It's definitely under that umbrella, at least in Beefcake's mind it is. They went to the group of women that had the highest quality of life of women anywhere in the world. I guarantee you, I would bet everything I have that by and large, white women had the highest quality of life of women anywhere in the world. If you're female, you are going to have a better standard of living and be treated better by your husband than women anywhere in the world. Okay? If you look at Asian countries, if you look at black countries, if you look at Arab countries, the women who had the highest quality of life in the entire world were always white women, long before feminism was brought specifically to white women. That's an obvious thing I'm pointing out that we already know. All right, if you're white and listening to me right now, you already, this is duh. I mean, you should be at the advanced stage listening to me on this, but it's one of those things most people never think about. How come feminism was brought to the group of women that already had it better than women anywhere else and told them they were being oppressed by the evil white males who were, how dare they, giving them the highest standard of living any women in the world ever had? Okay, now Beefcake does not personally have a problem with a woman who wants to do things other than become a mother and raise children. Okay, if a woman really does want to know more things about the world, and if our universities haven't been turned into the shams that they currently are, I mean, what's being currently taught in most universities these days is useless for men as well as women. But let's just say we had pro-white universities that were teaching the world the way it actually works, teaching a more correct model of physics, and you get the idea. You know, universities that weren't spewing bullshit, that would really teach you about the world around you, teach you the truth, unclouded by delusions of anti-white morality, you know, or anything like that. You had real you had real institutions of higher learning, and women wanted to go there and do that. I don't have any problem with that. Okay, if some women really do feel that they would be happier attempting to climb the corporate ladder and working in a cubicle or working in a big office or whatever they'd really want, if they really wanted that, fine. But I don't actually believe that is the innate biological desire that most women actually have, that is innate to them. I think that most of them would be perfectly happy being married to a man who makes enough money to support them with a high quality of life and being able to have and raise her children, being able to see her children at home take their first steps, hear their first laughter, being there to teach their children everything they're going to need to know that she's able to teach them and be able to send them to school and help them do their homework when they get home. You know, being a mother is a very important thing, and I believe that a lot that the vast staggering majority of white women would prefer that. But feminism came along and taught them that if they didn't go to school, you know, to the anti-white brainwashing centers, that if they didn't attend these things, and that if they didn't start climbing the corporate ladder, if they didn't look for a job to do, you know, at 40 hours a week, just like one of those evil white males, that if they weren't trying to live this exact lifestyle that men were previously living, that if they didn't take on all the health hazards and stress that have plagued men throughout history due to the stress of being the provider and protector of their families, you know, that if women, yeah, it is a stressful thing. It's well known that men tend to deal with more stress than women, or at least historically did because of the lifestyles they lived. Well, they, you know, when women started entering the workforce too in massive numbers, we're starting to see a lot of these stress-related illnesses in women. You know, basically, women were taught that unless they were going through all of these things, and unless this was their lifestyle, that if they wanted to have kids, their kids would go to daycare from the moment she could return to work, and then after daycare, school, and then high school and all that, and they'd have their after-school programs and whatever, and that she would be working 40 hours a week with her college degree, and that she would do all these things, and she had to do all of these things to be considered a complete human being. That somehow not climbing the corporate ladder means you're not legitimately a real person. I wish I didn't have to work. Beefcake wishes he could be retired early, honestly. It would be nice not to have to work. But if someone really wants to do the whole climb the corporate ladder, that's fantastic if they want to do it. But I think that it was a major disservice to women, and of course it was done on purpose. It wasn't an accident. That's my point. This was done on purpose, telling an entire generation, multi-generations of women, white women specifically, that unless they geared their life towards a career, that they, other than being a mom, that unless they were doing that, they weren't a real person, and that it was somehow bad and wrong for them if they only wanted to be a mother and raise children, and that family was the most important thing to them. Okay, that somehow it was like a notion that became vilified by Team Anti-White, and that is the result of feminism. Absolutely. According to feminism, males were living the higher quality of life because they were climbing the corporate ladder, or whatever you call having a 40-hour work week career is, and that unless women were doing the same, that they were not full human beings, that they were somehow being oppressed and kept down. Even though, from what I understand about history, most women were allowed to go to universities. Most women were allowed to join the workforce if they really, really wanted to. There might have been some things they were kept out of, but you know, beyond having the opportunities to do those things, I think it was a major, major, major disservice telling them that this was somehow an expectation now. And the other thing it succeeded in doing was it essentially, you know, when you dump a bunch of people that weren't previously in the workforce into the workforce, you make it more competitive to get jobs. Okay, when it's more competitive to get jobs, it's a buyer's market for employers, and they don't have to pay their employees as much. I mean, these days, if you combine the amount of hours that a white couple, man and woman, have to spend, both mom and dad are working at least 40 hours a week, and they hardly ever see their kids. And what's going on with their kids? They're being brainwashed by anti-whites. Come on, I know we're not happy for that. Okay, when a couple combined between the two has to work 80 hours a week or more just to keep their family afloat, if they even can afford to have a family, that's messed up. And then you take a look at all the other things that have happened to whites due to non-whites, that have happened specifically to white males. On top of having more competition now in the workplace, while they require a higher income just to support their family alone due to what feminism did, on top of that, you've got the workplace flooded with more non-whites, and what happens as far as to get your degree, which you officially have to have in order to get the job, even though it's mostly anti-white brainwashing, non-whites and women are given priorities over white males. If you're a white male, you're considered the lowest priority. Since you've been the evil oppressor all through history, everybody else needs to get special advantages over you, since race and gender don't matter. And anti-whites believe all this stuff. Going back to this page here, this Be Young and Shut Up page here, where this anti-white was essentially gloating about white genocide and admitting that anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. Anti-whites don't quite understand, especially the pro-feminist anti-whites. Like, their ideology has all these weird contradictions in it. Like, how do you support feminism, an ideology that essentially vilified white males, even though if you were to say if anyone treating their opposite gender better than anybody else, you know, was doing at the time, and I'm shocked that they would support all of these other things, that feminists would support all of these other things that essentially flood non-whites into white countries, where all of the men that are coming with these non-whites don't have the same view and respect for women that white men did. Not even initially. I mean, if you take a look at the way women are treated in a lot of other countries and that are non-white countries compared to what white women were treated like before feminism showed up, most of those women around the world are still treated far worse. I mean, they're not even treated like human beings at all in some countries. And yet, the same ideology, the same anti-white ideology that recommends the flooding of these non-whites into all-white countries and has been doing so for years, is all of a sudden now you have all these feminists out there talking about how horrible that Arab men treat their women, and then they're shocked when people call them an evil racist for it, and they don't realize that they have basically been adhering to two contradicting ideologies. Okay, diversity and multiculturalism is supporting everybody else's cultures, and when we say cultures, we mean behaviors. Okay, culture is a euphemism for behavior. I'm going to say that right now because it's something I just thought of. This is one that just came to my mind in my rambling here, is that culture happens to be just a code word for behavior. Other people's culture, they mean other people's behavior. That's what it really means. And so all of these non-white men are in white countries that don't have the same behavior towards women at all. And in fact, it was even worse than white men originally were. In fact, I'm not even saying white men were initially bad. I actually think most white men were not into beating their wives, that there was no conspiracy to oppress white women. It's just the vast staggering majority of white women were at one time perfectly happy being moms, and that was the greatest desire for them to do, that this was the big desire. Once in a while, some might have desired more, sure. And I don't have any problem with them having the opportunity, but I also don't think that it should be an expectation either. I think turning it into expectation simply drives up the age of having children to older ages where it's actually less safe to be having children. I think that it puts off reproduction during a woman's most fertile years. And of course, what does this do ultimately to a population? Well, it reduces the birth rate. And that is something that has happened to white people in white countries. I mean, you have all of these anti-whites talking about, oh, what's really doing you in is you have such a terrible birth rate. It must be because your men are so inferior at sex. It's interesting how anti-whites will always say race doesn't exist until it comes to saying nasty things about my race. You're going to tell me that all the men of my race are somehow inferior at sex, even though for some reason we were able to reproduce just fine for many thousands of years before living with all of these non-whites. Somehow we were having sex before Jews pushed circumcision on every fucking infant inside the United States. Oops, Beefcake swore. But it's a point that things have been damaging to us in many ways, but we survived just fine without it. If anything, less sex is happening between white men and white women, at least not that where contraceptives aren't involved, than it did before feminism. I can assure you that we're not reproducing as much. But what's really hurt our rate of reproduction has been this feminist ideology, which is part of Team Anti-White. And then anti-whites will turn around and say, well, the problem is you guys just aren't good enough at sex to have a higher population. You know, it's always some twist on it to justify white genocide, to say why whites are inferior and why we're not worthy of continued existence. That's how anti-whites think. But it's funny how it's, you know, it's another part of the anti-white umbrella that's reduced the birth rate. And then they turn around and say, well, because you have an aging population and you're going to have a population crash in the future since you have more old people than young people, now we need to flood your countries with more non-whites and you need to tolerate them. And interestingly enough, most of these non-white men have virtually no respect for women whatsoever. They view them like animals. And that's the way Beefcake sees it. That's the truth. But yet, the women who already had the highest quality of life in the world were taught that they were being oppressed and were taught that unless they were climbing the corporate ladder, they happened to be being oppressed. You know, I'll tell you what oppression is. Oppression happens to be expected to climb the corporate ladder. Oppression happens to be needing both mom and dad to be working 80 hours a week to support their family. Oppression happens to be practically being chained, if not literally, figuratively, by the constraints of your current lifestyle to a cubicle while your children takes their first step. While your children take their first steps in a daycare, while the daycare lady happens to be the person that they start calling mom first. I think any woman, if you're female and you're listening to Beefcake right now, I think that sounds horrific, doesn't it? The idea, and maybe it's something you've felt and that you might not have ever wanted to admit to anyone, but the truth is, if you're not there to see your children take their first steps, you are being oppressed. That's the truth. And I'm trying to think of a positive note to leave this on here, because I've gotten into a long tangent on how feminism is a form of white genocide. And I got into that because that's something that's supported by the blog that is openly gloating about white genocide, which is a good thing to see anti-whites doing. And that's what I'll get into here. When anti-whites start coming out and they start openly gloating about white genocide, they're doing our job for us. Let's focus right now, when we're out there posting the mantra, let's focus on the ones that are still using their code words and their euphemisms. The ones being honest about it, well, I'm trying to think of how to say it, and I know I've said it before. I believe a good old wise man once said, when your opponent sticks their foot in their mouth, don't help them pull it out. And I honestly believe that a lot of what are right now anti-whites that are in the brainwashed group, that as they start coming out and getting more vocal, they're going to realize what they've been pushing all along, and many of them may recoil from it. Quite possible. And that is the positive notion Beefcake wants to leave you on in the advanced stage here tonight. You all have a good night.